I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. With his eagle eye on the Merrimack Valley, we return now to Bill Kirk of the Lawrence Eagle Tribune. Of course, Bill Kirk, known for whole bunches of newspapers in the area. Bill, welcome back. How you doing?
Great, Rick. How are you doing? Good to be here.
Doing well. And it's nice to have some optimism hang on to now at this point, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so much going on with the vaccine and Johnson & Johnson. That seems to be the big news. If Johnson & Johnson can start rolling out its vaccines, I think that'll be a game changer.
Yeah, I want to get to that in a little while because there is so much to discuss. We talk a lot about it down here on the lower end of the North Shore, and I want to see what's going on up county, as Al Needham used to say over at WESX. But first, I know that you haven't been covering officially the mayor's office in Lawrence, but I did get to meet Lawrence Mayor Dan Rivera just once. It was fascinating to talk with. He was really cool. The Gloucester mayor has great respect for him. She's dealt with him many times. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are overall, Dan. And I know that you've had some dealings with Mayor Rivera, but also the fact that he is leaving. What's the first thing that comes to mind?
Oh, yeah, no, I covered Lawrence for about a year, and I was really impressed with him. He's one of the most upbeat guys you'll ever meet. He's super, I mean, you talk about optimism.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of these, you know, glass half full guys all the way, and he was great to deal with. But he had nothing but loyalty for his city,
mm-hmm.
And it's a very difficult job. It's a very political city. There's a lot of different moving parts, a lot of people coming at you at any given time, and he seemed to handle it really well. Kept his eye on the ball, and it seems to me the ball was, let's get some economic development going in the city. Let's get some jobs going. Let's solve some long-standing problems. And he did all of that. He worked well with the city council, which is, well, his working well with the city council is a relative term because that's a tough group. But he did well as anybody could. I mean, it's a 9-member city council, so mm-hmm. You're dealing with a lot of different personalities, and I thought he handled it really well. And he had good people around him, good staff. You know, he had a lot of good ideas, and like I said, he just wanted to move the city forward, and he was always a pleasure to deal with. Like you said, he's a nice man, and you know, got a family. And you know, when he left, you know, some people said, well, why are you, you know, why would you leave? And you know, it's like any the mayor is a difficult job, and he didn't get paid very much, frankly, for the job he was doing, for the
mm-hmm.
budget that he had. I mean, he's basically the CEO of I can't remember the budget, but it's well over $100 million.
Wow.
If you take the schools into account, because he was also on the school committee.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, he really did do a lot for that city, and he really cared about the city. It was genuine.
Yeah, what was nice? Oh, you get that right away. And what was nice for me, you know, I've got this little podcast and this little sports website, but he treated me so well, and I know, and then you see him on, you know, on the Boston news stations, and he's the same man, and that's very impressive. And I remember, correct me if I'm wrong here, Bill, but a couple of years ago there was a big development by the pizza owner up there transformed some of the development for Lawrence, and he was quite proud of that too. Am I right on that one?
Well, that's, yeah, you're talking about Sal Napoleon Riverwalk.
Yes.
And that had been going on for a long time, well before Rivera came in. But he just certainly worked well with he and Sal worked well together. There were a lot of other developments. Well, basically Sal had sort of this phase one, phase two, phase three projects, and he redeveloped a lot of property while Rivera was there, and certainly Rivera worked hard on that, because it's all becomes sort of property taxable, you know, commercial tax
mm-hmm.
that goes right into the city budget, and that was always a tough a tough thing for cities and towns, you know, to make sure, because they, you know, they have a big fire department, big police department, obviously a huge school district with, I don't know how many schools they have. I kind of lost track, but it's a lot.
Yeah.
And it's a, like, as everybody knows, it's a very diverse population. And, he took care of, it seems to me his big sort of breakout moment was what during the Columbia gas crisis.
Yes, yes.
And he really stood up and made sure that people were paying attention and listened to the needs of Lawrence. He was not shy about saying things that that maybe Governor Baker didn't want him to say, but he was always very forthright and very like I said before, he's always a cheerleader for the city.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing the next chapter of Dan Rivera. Now, Bill, you've been primarily ensconced in Methuen, but the topic next covers everybody that I know of. And talking about the COVID-19 response, and Methuen had quite a knee-jerk reaction a few days ago.
Yeah, they ran into some... I don't know if it's the supply chain or if it's just the lack of shots or if it's the mismanagement in at the state level, but the Mayor Perry wanted to open up his own vaccination clinic in Methuen, and so they got space basically given to them, I think for free, if I'm not mistaken, but from the Loop, the mall up there, and they got a nice space, and They hired some people, or, you know, health workers, and they got a bunch of volunteers in, and the first dose of vaccinations, they got 100 doses from the state, which is really meager when you consider the number of elderly. I think there's something like 9,000 elderly people in Methuen.
Mm-hmm.
And they had 100... you know, 100 shots for seniors. And this was before, this is when it was just 75 and older. And so, you know, that's not nearly enough, obviously. But then the next week they did another 100. But then the following week, which was, I think, last week, they got nothing.
Oh, boy.
And the mayor was very upset by it. And as were the city councilors, and as was the state delegation, and they all sort of teamed up and just started writing letters and, you know, bombarding the mayor's office with letters and emails and text messages and whatever else. And then the governor announced a whole new plan. He said that we weren't even going to send these small doses to these small vaccination clinics, and they're just going to do these big regional ones. So, you know, the argument is, you know, in Methuen, if you have a local clinic, then you're going to get a lot of elderly folks are much more comfortable going to the local clinic rather than going, say, to Fenway Park or Gillette Stadium. That said, they have beefed up the number of vaccines going to the Greater Lawrence Family Health Clinic, which there's one of in Methuen as well as in Lawrence. So they're getting the vaccinations out there. They're just, I think the problem is A, is publicizing it, and then B, is just keeping a steady stream of because like someone like me, I don't care. I don't mind going to Fenway or Gillette or wherever. But a lot of people sort of in their 70s and 80s, first of all, they're having a hard time signing up. But once they do sign up, I talked to a school committee member from Lawrence the day before yesterday, and she said she made an appointment, but it's in Connecticut.
Oh,
she's got to drive like a couple hours to get there, and then she has to go a couple hours back. But that's the closest she could get.
Wow.
And she did every, you know, and then you just hear these horror stories about people. I just was looking online earlier today about how people would get on and it would say, your wait is 25,000 minutes.
Yeah.
What does that transfer.
I know.
I mean,
I saw one that says, you know, 3 months. Don't expect anything for 3 months. And it's like, okay, that's pretty encouraging.
Yeah. It's really, that's why I say, that's what I said earlier. If the Johnson & Johnson vaccine can get approved and they can really start pumping out some significant numbers of vaccines, I think that should really start to make a dent in the whole thing.
Well, I'm in phase two, and I've obviously not been able to sign up yet. I look, and my wife looks every day, and I'm on the upper end of the age group. I'm at the front of the line in terms of all my acquaintances. But that said, I had to go for some lab work today at the Addison Gilbert Hospital in Gloucester. And lo and behold, in the registration, they asked me for my email address and my phone number, and they said, we will be texting you. We'll be texting you or emailing you as soon as you know, the availability comes for you to sign up. We're going to get a hold of you. And so what I'm getting at here, I think, Bill, is that the so-called rollout was certainly touch and go, and it's like popping your clutch here early when you're learning how to drive back in the old, you know, standard shift days. But it seems to me that almost on a day-by-day basis, the complaints that are rolling into the governor's office, they're working on them. And I guess today the website is supposed to be a little bit more responsive. And some of these, like CVS stores and places like that, are starting to get notified that they'll be getting the vaccine. So it seems to me that despite the mess at the beginning, that everybody's working, they're sort of all rowing in the same direction. Is that what you find?
Yeah, I think everybody obviously wants it to work. Even I just read earlier today that the Biden administration is working on a sort of a national vaccine sign up or registration list of its own, some sort of a website to augment maybe states and local efforts. But I think that and it's funny how in some, you know, I did a story a week or two ago about comparing New Hampshire and Massachusetts, and people in Massachusetts were saying, oh boy, if all my friends in New Hampshire are getting the shots and they're all getting the vaccines. And then we talked to a bunch of people in New Hampshire who said they were having the same kinds of problems. They couldn't get the vaccine even though they were eligible for it, and they couldn't sign up, and the grass isn't always greener on the other side, as I think I wrote in my story. It's a problem everywhere. It's a problem of supply.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of the old Cabbage Patch dolls back in the 80s. Remember those? They were very popular, and every kid wanted one. You get one, but it took months and months for parents to get one. So it seems like it's the same kind of thing.
That's a good way to compare it.
Oh, man.
It's a supply and demand kind of a thing. I mean, everybody wants one. Everybody wants a shot. I mean, in the meantime, I mean, I wear my mask all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I just got tested the other day because I wasn't feeling too great and came back negative, obviously, thank God. But you know, you just got to stay vigilant, and people just can't, even after they get the vaccines, people have to just sort of be patient and just wait for this sort of, I guess they call it herd immunity, and wait for the herd immunity to really take effect and really to have a real impact so that the numbers, because I mean, we just hit 500,000 dead in the country, you know, from COVID, which is a number I never remember hearing anybody at the beginning of this mention 500,000. I heard 200 at the most, which is sort of what Trump and his people were saying initially. But to hit 500,000 is just, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, and I don't think we're going to really understand this whole thing until we look back on it, you know, once we're out of the mud and the muck, because it is the impact in so many different ways, Bill. And along those lines, I know you're a sports fan, you support high school sports and so on, and there is Fall 2 coming up, and I know down here in the lower end of the North Shore, they're getting ready for football. How are things going up county where you are?
I think we have a story on the front page of the Eagle Tribune today about a protest I'm not sure what school it is, but the kids in these school districts are protesting. They had signs and they had a march, and they were, and I think it was on that very subject, was bring back uh, bring you know, let's have sports.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was Whittier Tech.
Right, right. Kevin Bradley, yep, up there. Yep.
That's in Haverhill. And, right? And,
yes, yes.
And so they were saying, yeah, they want fall, they want to save fall to sports. And they're out there, you know, they're shoveling off the turf fields, and they're saying, save our season, let us play. But it sounds like there's just so many complications to it, not least of which is keeping students safe from getting the coronavirus.
Yeah, and I know that back, I think it was last July or August, there was a student rally in Danvers for a lot of Northeast Conference schools, and it was organized by the kids themselves. And it had an impact. It had an impact on the local school committees and city councils. And so hopefully that Whittier Tech will be able to play as well. I know Coach Bradley very well. He's also the director of athletics up there. And, you know, so far I know that, you know, in reading the Gloucester Times and Salem News coverage of sports, the winter sports season went well. Some of the schools had to shut down for a week or so, but nothing major went wrong, Bill. So, again, there's that little spark of optimism I'm looking at.
Yeah, and I thought that, yeah, I mean, if there's any place that's going to, where you have a concentration of people and in an enclosed environment, it's got to be a hockey rink. I mean, you know, granted the airflow is probably pretty good because they have, you know, all kinds of condensers and things like that to keep the building cold. But at least in Methuen, they wouldn't let parents into the rink. I mean, the kids were playing to completely empty stadiums.
Right.
Which I think the parents were obviously very upset about, and I'm sure the kids were too. On the other hand, like you said, I never heard of any big outbreaks. I never heard of any big where lots of people were getting the disease from hockey games, so, which also surprises me because they're all in these tight little locker rooms.
They're not allowed in the locker rooms, Bill.
Oh, they're not?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, they were. That was one of the safety things, and neither in basketball nor hockey were they allowed. The hockey players had to social distance in the rink itself, pregame and postgame, and they had to dress at home and then just leave the rink immediately afterwards. So those were, you know, they were inconveniences, but it worked, you know?
It really worked, and they got to play, which is so cool.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you think about, there was a piece, I think it was the Gloucester Times yesterday, you look at these kids that are getting accepted at colleges, it was two of the field hockey players who were going off to play, I think, field hockey at very good schools. Pittsburgh State was one, and the other was...
Well, I got the paper right here with Nick Kukuru, Bill. It's Mia Sala. She'll be playing field hockey at Assumption, and Ella Marshall will be playing softball at Fitchburg. So, yeah.
Oh, she's playing softball.
Yep.
Well, yeah, I mean, these kids, if they're not stellar in the classroom, or even if they are, but they don't have a lot of money, they don't want to have big student loans, and they can play and show that they can play, and they can get scholarships, then it's a life changer. But I don't see how they're going to display their skill set and their skills if they're not allowed to play.
Yeah,
I wonder how that's affecting families in their college planning.
It's huge. And in bigger cities like Lynn and Lawrence have suffered the most. The kids have really, really been hit hard by that. And there's got to be some kind of waiver or compensation somehow for those kids. It's got to be.
Yeah, I just have to think that recruiters, if they have nothing to look at,
right?
What are they? You know, what do you do? I feel bad for these kids.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I mean, it's hard enough not being able to be in a classroom and hanging out with your friends after school and in the clubs and you know the different things that they do in high school. And I mean, I think it's even harder for the younger kids because if you have a young kid, you know, like a little boy who's little boys are. They're hyperactive anyway, and they don't want to sit in front of a computer all day. And I don't blame them.
They don't. Hey, listen, as we wrap this thing up, Bill, are you back out in the field, or are you still working pretty much remotely?
It's a mixed bag. I go in. Right now, we're going in one. We're all going in about one day a week,
mm-hmm.
and we just sort of started that back up again. So it's been good. We get to get back into the office and to start getting back out into the community again, because there's so much going on. There's so much happening despite the pandemic. They're reopening. I mean, the school committee, for example, they meet in person. The city council, I think, soon will be meeting in person. City workers are, you know, for the most part, if they're fire department, obviously, and the police department, and then there's a few, you know, some critical employees at City Hall, and, you know, the public works department people are all there. You know, they're doing the work for the taxpayers. And so it's good, you know, it'd be good for me to get back into the community to sort of really, you know, physically, because, you know, that's where you get the stories.
All right, that's Bill Kirk with his eagle eye on the Merrimack Valley, reporting from the Lawrence Eagle Tribune. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore. This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire. By the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing msonewsports@gmail.com.